Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling the great operational migration. It's that decision every major enterprise faces eventually. Moving their entire infrastructure to the cloud. We all know the Berkshire copy, right? Unlimited scalability, enhanced security, huge cost savings. That's the easy part. The hard part, the thing that I think makes IT directors break into a cold sweat, is the migration itself.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the benefits are clear, but the single greatest threat is disruption. You're talking about downtime, data loss, maybe catastrophic operational failure during the transition. Mm-hmm. For any mission-critical operation, you can't afford a maintenance window that stretches into days or even a week.
So our mission today is to cut through the jargon and, you know, really uncover the blueprints. We are drilling down into the specific strategies that let organizations execute a true zero downtime transition, specifically to Microsoft Azure.
And Azure is a crucial focus here. It's such a dominant player in the enterprise space, especially for companies already deep in the Microsoft ecosystem. Think about it. These are massive, complex organizations. They're already using Microsoft 365, Dynamics 365, and they have decades of Windows Server apps. So Azure's native compatibility, it isn't just a perk. It's a monumental reduction in complexity and, just as important, the learning curve for their IT teams.
It's the path of least resistance for integration, essentially. But let's start with the stakes, because the case for zero downtime has to be ironclad. When a system goes down, we think about, you know, lost productivity, but what are the true dollar-for-dollar costs our sources highlight?
Oh, the cost spirals so quickly. It goes way beyond just productivity. If you're running an e-commerce platform, for instance, that outage is instant revenue loss. We could be talking millions per hour, depending on the scale. But then you have to think bigger. The cost of remediation, potential compliance fines if some protected data becomes unavailable, and customer churn. One sustained outage can take years to recover from, reputationally. The company's mandating zero downtime, they get it. They're investing to protect brand integrity just as much as active revenue.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, the cost of winning a lost customer back is just astronomical. So if we acknowledge that risk, how does choosing Azure right at the start stack the deck in favor of resilience, even before the migration begins?
It's really the sheer scale and the institutionalization of risk mitigation they offer. Just take security and compliance. Azure maintains these rigorous certifications like HIPAA for healthcare, PCI DSS for financial transactions, and SOC2. These aren't one-and-done things. They require continuous auditing.
Things that would be prohibitively expensive for most companies to maintain on their own premises. Precisely. Building and maintaining your own infrastructure to pass a continuous PCI DSS audit. That requires a massive dedicated investment. Azure just handles that burden at hyperscale. And on top of that, you get built-in global disaster recovery across their network of data centers. It ensures that, you know, a regional failure doesn't halt your entire operation. That kind of high availability across multiple global regions is something most internal data centers just can't afford.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for me, the planning phase. Our sources all stress that a successful migration isn't a single event. It's the end result of months of meticulous planning. And the foundation is this pre-migration assessment, which is far more than just counting servers, right? It is the non-negotiable first step. If you rush this part, the whole project is basically doomed to fail. You need a comprehensive, a truly holistic discovery process. That means using tools, often something like Azure Migrate, to not just catalog your apps and databases, but to understand that complex web of dependencies. Which application talks to which database? Which service relies on some legacy authentication system? If you miss one key dependency, you risk moving a component that suddenly can't talk to its partners back on-prem.
I can only imagine how complex that infrastructure mapping gets in older environments where the documentation might be decades out of date.
It is. And once you know what you have to know how well it's currently running. That's where performance baselines come in. You must establish clear metrics before you move anything. We're talking transaction latency, IOPS, the input-output operations per second, and peak resource use. You really should be monitoring these metrics for at least 30, but preferably 90 days, just to capture a full business cycle.
And why is that continuous monitoring so crucial?
Because if you move to Azure and the application seems to be working, but say transaction latency has doubled, from a performance standpoint, your migration has failed. That baseline gives you the objective proof that your new cloud workload performs at, or even better than, the level your users expect.
And I'm guessing the final piece of this planning puzzle has to be the financial assessment.
Absolutely. The cost analysis is where you compare your current total cost of ownership. And that includes power, cooling, real estate, staff, a against the projected Azure costs. This analysis is also where you start to identify those optimization opportunities early on, which really influences your whole strategy.
Speaking of strategy, once the analysis is done, organizations face that famous choice between speed and optimization. We hear about lift and shift versus application modernization. What are the real trade-offs?
This is where a business has to be brutally honest with itself about its timeline and its budget. So lift and shift, just rehosting the application as is, it's fast. You can get to the cloud quickly, maybe 6 months. The downside, though, is you're often paying for resources inefficiently because the app wasn't designed for the cloud. You miss out on serverless scaling, meaning your long-term costs will be higher.
And on the other side, modernization.
Application modernization is the more strategic choice. You refactor the application to use cloud-native features, like containers or managed databases. This delivers vastly superior performance, and it reduces long-term operational costs. Some sources suggest up to a 30% reduction in TCO over 5 years. But, and this is the big catch, significantly extends your project timeline.
So if lift and shift is fast but inefficient, and modernization is efficient but slow, where do the zero downtime blueprints lead us?
They overwhelmingly lead to the phased approach. You just don't try to flip a massive monolithic infrastructure switch all at once. You segment your systems by criticality and by risk. You start with non-critical services, like an internal HR app or something. Use that to test your migration process, refine your tools, and build up that internal expertise. You move those systems incrementally, you learn from any little hiccups, and then you apply those hard-won lessons when you finally get to the mission-critical stuff, like your core billing or ERP databases. It's the ultimate form of risk reduction.
Okay, let's jump now to the technical execution. This is the part I think our listeners really want to get into, the aha moments. The core puzzle of zero downtime is, how do engineers actually achieve the cutover without the end user seeing even a fraction of a second of interruption?
The whole mechanism relies on two things, parallel processing and, well, a bit of deception. You have to run the old environment and the new Azure environment simultaneously with perfect data synchronization right up until that final instantaneous DNS flip.
Walk us through the hardest part of that. The data, it's constantly changing. How do you possibly keep an on-premises database synchronized with an Azure database in real time?
The key technique there is continuous database replication. So if you're moving, say, an on-prem SQL Server database to Azure SQL database, you establish real-time replication. Tools like the Azure Database Migration Service, or DMS, they manage this complex process. They typically use a form of log shipping, where every single transaction on the source database is immediately copied and applied to the target database in Azure.
So the Azure database is basically just a live mirror.
Exactly. It's a warm, perfectly functional mirror, maintaining data consistency down to the second. This means when it's time for the cutover, the application just switches its connection string from the old on-prem IP to the new Azure database endpoint. And since the data is already fresh, the transition is seamless from the application's point of view. There's no big data dump phase that would cause hours of downtime.
That sets up the architecture switch perfectly. And this brings us to that famous concept for continuous availability, blue-green deployment. How does that work in an Azure migration?
Blue-green deployment is probably the most elegant solution. Think of your blue environment as your stable, live, existing infrastructure. The green environment is the new, completely parallel, fully configured Azure replica. And crucially, you deploy, you configure, and you thoroughly test that green environment while blue is still handling all production traffic.
And what does that thorough testing involve before you even think about making the switch?
It has to be comprehensive. You're running performance testing, security audits, functional tests, all using synthetic traffic that mimics real user behavior. You ensure that the new Azure setup can handle peak load, that it meets your latency targets, all measured against those performance baselines we established earlier. Only once green passes every single metric do you flip the load balancer or the DNS entry, and that instantaneously redirects all user traffic from blue to green.
But the idea of flipping one giant switch still feels, I don't know, high risk. What if 2 minutes after the flip, you find some weird authentication bug that only impacts 5% of your users? You've already committed.
That's a great point, and that's where the concept of a canary deployment becomes essential. It's often managed with intelligent load balancers or something like Azure Traffic Manager. Instead of flipping the entire switch at once, you route traffic gradually. You might start by redirecting just 1% of your users, your canaries, to the new Azure environment.
Like sending the bird into the coal mine first.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You monitor that 1% very, very intensively. If those canary users report errors, you immediately divert them back to the stable Blue environment and you pause the migration. You've isolated the issue before 99% of your users were ever impacted. Then you slowly ramp it up 5%, 10%, 25%, until 100% of your users are safely on Azure. A phase switchover is the ultimate safety net.
That makes the cutover seem so much more manageable. Okay, let's pivot hard to security and ongoing optimization, because a secure migration is only half the battle. How do we make sure sensitive data is protected during the move itself?
Security has to be a layer that's baked into every single step. We rely on comprehensive encryption protocols. That means data has to be encrypted in transit as it's moving over the network and at rest when it's stored in Azure. And what's more, organizations have to retain full control, often using customer-managed keys for their most sensitive data.
And what about managing who has access to what, both during and after the migration?
That's all handled through robust identity management. Integrating with Azure Active Directory is critical, not just for single sign-on, but to enforce zero trust principles. That means implementing multi-factor authentication, or MFA, for everyone. And it means using role-based access control, RBAC. RBAC is how you enforce the principle of least privilege. So the migration team only has the high-level access they need for the move itself, and regular employees can only access what's strictly necessary for their job.
Okay, let's talk about the money. Post-migration sticker shock is a huge concern for a lot of people. How do organizations make sure they don't migrate to Azure, only to find their cloud bill is actually higher than their old data center costs?
The potential for sticker shock is very real if you don't plan for optimization right away. But the biggest immediate money saver for most enterprises is something called the Azure Hybrid Benefit. See, most companies already own licenses for Windows Server and SQL Server. This program lets them use those existing licenses in Azure, so they don't have to pay full price for new cloud-based licenses. It's an enormous financial incentive right out of the gate.
That handles the licensing, which is huge. But what about the ongoing consumption costs? We heard a really staggering statistic about potential savings.
Yes. The secret to long-term cost reduction is continuous post-migration optimization. Once your usage patterns stabilize, especially for predictable workloads like dev environments or steady-state corporate apps, organizations can commit to using Azure-reserved instances and savings plans.
And tell us more about that massive savings number.
These commitments can reduce your costs by up to 72% compared to the standard pay-as-you-go pricing. But there's a caveat. To get that maximum 72%, you're locking in usage for 1 to 3 years. That means you have to be very confident in your long-term demand forecast. It really rewards predictive capacity planning, which is why all that initial assessment work pays dividends long after the migration is done.
So it sounds like the greatest cost saver isn't some secret tool. It's just really smart financial forecasting and capacity planning.
Precisely. And don't forget automation. Using tools like Azure Automation and Logic Apps to automatically scale down environments during off hours can dramatically reduce your operational overhead.
Even with all this planning, there are always physical and network challenges. What solutions does Azure offer for those specific roadblocks? Let's start with data transfer. I mean, moving petabytes over the public internet sounds impossible.
It often is, yeah. It's impractical for both time and security reasons. For massive data sets, Azure provides the Azure Data Box services. This is a physical solution. Microsoft literally sends you a rugged, secure appliance. Your team loads the data locally, encrypts it, and then ships the physical box back to Azure. They upload it directly inside their secure data center, which is exponentially faster than any internet connection. The logistics of the data box are really the key insight there.
And what about those really latency-sensitive applications? The public internet can be notoriously unreliable for core business functions.
For mission-critical workloads, yeah, reliability is paramount, and latency has to be minimal. That's where Azure ExpressRoute comes in. It completely bypasses the public internet. It gives you a dedicated, private, low-latency connection between your on-prem environment and Azure. It is expensive, no question, but it offers the guaranteed performance and bandwidth you need for applications that just cannot tolerate jitter or unpredictable network hops.
And the final roadblock, those truly stubborn, decade-old applications that just weren't built for the cloud?
Legacy application compatibility. It's a classic challenge. Your assessment should reveal which ones need refactoring or maybe containerization, wrapping them in Docker containers, for example, to make them portable. For the ones that are just too complex to change, you might use compatibility layers to bridge that gap. But honestly, those legacy apps usually become the strongest argument for a true application modernization project down the road.
So let's wrap this deep dive up. What is the single overarching lesson you want our listeners to take away from this about achieving zero downtime migration?
I think the core takeaway is that zero downtime is not a miracle. It is a meticulously engineered outcome. It's achieved not by luck, but through that deep upfront financial and architectural planning in the assessment phase, followed by the precise and, you know, safe execution of sophisticated techniques like Blue Green and Canary deployments.
The technology blueprint is clearly available. The tools are robust.
They are, but I think the final thought has to be on the human and continuous element of all this. While we've talked about powerful technical tools like ExpressRoute and DataBox, one of the most persistent hurdles in the industry is the skill gap within internal IT teams. You might execute a perfect migration, but realizing the full ROI from the cloud, maintaining those huge cost savings, that requires continuous, sophisticated management. The real long-term challenge is making sure your teams have the expertise to continuously monitor the environment with tools like Azure Monitor to right-size those resources accurately and to prevent cloud sprawl so that those massive savings are realized not just next month, but 5 years from now. That ongoing operational maturity, that's the difference between a successful migration and a truly successful long-term cloud strategy.